You're listening to Two Guys Talking Wine with Michael Pincus and Andre Prue.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Andre.
I figure it's better we just start rolling tape before we waste all the good stuff. I guess full disclosure, you're a little tardy tonight.
Hey, don't use that language. It's late.
It is. With the new job means that this podcast is not going to have a regular recording schedule like we usually do. I'm pulling up, so I've created a spreadsheet to keep track of all of our swears. And it looks like on the last swear chart, I said the C word, not that C word, but 8 times in a row since you've last sworn. So good for you, Michael.
Wow, look at me. I am very proud of myself for keeping it clean.
And I guess we were sort of chatting because it felt like we had a lot more work than ahead because we try to make sure that we've got a good pipeline going in case one of us gets busy. But all the good content's been getting out there. We've done some really good podcasts lately.
I think so, too. We've really upped our game, especially with Cab Franc and, ever since we jettisoned the C word, I think things are getting a lot better.
I think we can tease the fact that next week's podcast is going to feature Allison Sloot. If you are not on Instagram, you should follow her. She's at Cab Franc Chronicles, and we had a very interesting conversation with her that I think we're going to be having her back. Although, man, I'm really sick of this COVID thing.
You know what? I really want to start getting together with some people and doing some tasting, and I know that... I know if we're gonna be teeing stuff up. I understand we are getting to the point of having I think Ontario's King of Cab Franc on.
Yep.
And we're either gonna do it in person, or one of us will be in person and the other one will be remote, or we'll just all be like at a triangular table at a corner.
Well, I guess before we get into the wine chat, like, I'll just let people know, like, what's going on. I've taken a new job with a marketing firm, Reach Digital, in Hamilton, which means that I'm commuting to Hamilton 3 or 4 times a week. So last week I commuted 4 times a week. And I think throughout this, like, you know, I am not a denier. I'm not an anti-anything. I think we need to do what the health officials are telling us to do. I think we need to take this seriously. We need to wash our hands. We need to wear masks. But it's a bit of a trip when I get out of my car in downtown Hamilton. I walk into the office where I'm working by myself or just with the CEO, where we wear masks and keep our distance. And I walk past the stretch of pubs and people are outside on the patio having drinks, where in Toronto, it feels very different and things are locked down. And I'm tired and a little burnt out by all this.
Well, I don't think you're alone, Andre. I think we're all a little bit tired, but you know, we can't take our foot off the gas. You know, it's the marshmallow test. I heard that on the radio the other day.
But you need to dumb this down. Then what is the marshmallow test? I really like that analogy, Michael.
So the marshmallow test, I don't remember when it was created or when this scientist did it, but I believe it was in the 60s or the 70s. And what he did was he basically sat down with some young kids and he said, I will give you a marshmallow now, or if you can wait 15 minutes, I will give you a second marshmallow. And it turns out that I think about 15% of the kids actually waited. The rest of them ate their marshmallow and didn't get the second. And as it turned out, then they followed these children through their life. And those who could delay gratification actually had a better outcome in life. And that's where we're at right now. We are at the point where we're telling you that there's a marshmallow and we're going to shove it in your arm. And everybody's going, okay, great, I can go back to normal. But we still have a few months to wait before we're all marshmallowed up. So it's our second marshmallow.
You know, I think that's the most profound thing you've ever said on this podcast. I salute you for it.
And
it's
I'm not
funny.
Even drunk.
It's funny. When we say nice things to each other, I think the default reaction is either you or I think we're screwing with each other, and I assure you that's not the case.
I just heard that, and I was like, that's such a, you know, it's what they're saying about what's going on in the U.S. right now, especially like in Florida, where they're all going for March break, and they're saying, you know, the U.S. The young ones down there are just not, you know, they're not taking it seriously because they've got the marshmallow.
So. Yeah, exactly. So if you haven't figured it out by this point, we have no guest in this podcast. I'm going to make my contribution to the swear jar. This one is because colloquially we refer to this as one of the shooting the casts.
I guess it is. Yes. We're just going to chat away here for a little bit. Andre, have you, you know what? I should ask. Have you tasted anything of interest lately?
Yes.
The way you said it, it's like you've had sex with it too.
You know, you and I have talked a lot about like price and value and spending a lot on wine and not spending a lot on wine. I think one of the places where dollar for dollar, if you're looking for a really expensive bottle of wine that doesn't disappoint, and I'm not going to make it a blanket statement, but I think for the most part, champagne is a good place to park your money. I'm waiting for you to give me crap and wait to.
To some, yeah, I can see it. I don't think you have to park your money there.
No, I'm not saying.
Better,
I'm not saying.
Better
I'm not
value
saying...
sparkling wine out there. Okay. I think you're. I think you're wrong, but go ahead. Try and make your case.
So to celebrate the change in career in the new job, I picked up. It caught my eye, frankly, because of the packaging and. It turns out that even when you're spending a couple $100 on a bottle of wine, I'm still a sucker for packaging. I bought a bottle of Champagne Henri Giraud, I Grand Cru de Chien Brut. Yeah.
And look,
and it was great, and it was incredible. My wife ended up drinking more than half the bottle and drank it like water. Which is too bad because it was a very expensive bottle of wine, but.
And she told the neighbors to eat cake.
It was a very nice treat. And, should you have the means, I highly recommend it. When I talk about the packaging, you can give me crap about how much I spent on it after, but the top of the bottle was sealed with a staple instead of with a normal, like, cage.
Yeah, one of those like a large industrial staple. I've seen those. Yeah.
Yeah, and it comes in a wooden crate. It comes with a blue box that has a tool where it tells you how to remove the staple. You know, it gives you the whole romantic story with it. But I thought the whole thing was kind of cool, and frankly, it felt expensive going through the whole process.
Yeah, yeah, and the tool was you. No, but look. I get it. You know, that bottle's going to taste great because you're celebrating something special.
Totally.
And
totally.
It's always going to taste. You could have opened a $15 bottle of Connoisseur Rosé Brut. And
no,
I bet you it would have tasted great because you were celebrating something special.
I'm sure it would have tasted great, but it wouldn't have tasted this great. It was just like.
You don't know because you didn't do it.
I guess. Okay, so I guess my next milestone, my next major milestone, I commit to you to open a bottle of Connoisseur sparkling rosé.
And just make sure that it's a special occasion. It'll taste delicious. And that's, you know, wine is still 80% of what's going on. As Thomas Batchelder likes to say, you know, when La Libération happens, you know, we'll all get together and have a party. And it doesn't matter if everybody ends up puking in the bushes. It's going to be a great party.
I agree with that. Okay, if I can go to the other side of the coin, I'm going to go through. I've tasted three wines recently. Like, that was definitely the holy grail. But there's two other wines that I've picked up for different reasons that were interesting. But the other two are under $20. There's one available in vintages right now. It's Chateau La Grave d'Arzac. It's a Grave. It's a white Bordeaux. If I can just paint the picture for you, the agent for the wine is Signature Wine and Spirits. But I was looking for something different. I was at Summerhill. If you go into the back room at Summerhill on the right side of the wall. You have Burgundy. Everything was too expensive. I was just like, you know what? Maybe I can get some decent entry-level Bordeaux, like maybe a Bordeaux Supérieur or something. And I saw this, and it was a white Bordeaux. It's $16 a bottle. I picked up the bottle. I flipped over to the back because it's like, okay, what's the mix? What's the blend? Because often it'll tell you, you know, this is X percent Sauvignon Blanc, X percent Semillon. I'm going to do this poorly. This is what the back label of that particular white wine says. This wine is produced on gravelly silica soil where Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot give birth to this beautiful red wine. With a deep garnet red, the nose is dominated with ripe dark fruit. It is elegant and charming in the mouth, and the tannins are harmonious and soft. This wine pairs perfectly with red wine, charcuterie, and cheese. Serve at 18 degrees. So I was just like, okay, someone here definitely messed up. You put the red label on the back of the white. Let me take this home and try it.
And you know what? But before you go on,
yeah.
I would like to say, with how the LCBO acts with a front label, they'll get angry or make people blot out, you know, motorcycles because it promotes
drinking and driving
and riding a motorcycle. They will blot out a cartoon pilot holding a glass of wine.
Oh, Michael, okay.
It promotes drinking and flying, and yet nobody could go that the back label is completely wrong.
Okay. Now, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing is when I flipped the bottle over, because I knew it was a white, like it's the green glass, you can see right through it. After I read the back label, you can just picture this in your head. I took the bottle and I held it up to the light just to make sure that it was white.
Yeah. I inventory wine cellars. There's times that I look at something and I'm like, I am positive that that's a red wine. 100%. Hold it up just to light just to make sure. And sometimes they're so old that you're like, yeah, that's got a little bit of a hue of red. So it is still a red wine.
This wine is fantastic. It's fantastic. I'm actually on my fourth bottle of it because it is so affordable. Honeysuckle, white flower, you know, bright tangerine, what you expect from Semillon, crisp acid, 12.5% alcohol. I wish the back label told me a little bit more of the story about it, but, you know, I'll let that one go. And then
there's always the internet.
Which is, you know, thank God the LCBO website was up to date so I could see a little bit more what was in it. The last one is a Côte du Rhône Village. You and I have talked about it on this podcast before, not this specific wine, but just how Côte du Rhône can offer really great value. It's another bottle I picked up because of the label. It's Louis Bernard is the producer, and the bottle is embossed with the coat of arms on it. So, you know, it has that Southern Rhone really rich feel to it. It's a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre. It's a little warm, 15% alcohol, but my wife, Anya, has a bit of a spider sense. She can detect alcohol when it feels a little bit warm. She guessed that this wine was a $30 bottle of Côte du Rhône. And I've drank a couple bottles of this as well. Definitely stuff worth seeking out. All this from outside Ontario. So, sorry.
Yes, I'm noticing that. And here's the funny thing. I was just looking this up because Louis Bernard does sound familiar. And I happen to have two bottles of a Louis Bernard Côte du Rhône and a Louis Bernard Costière de Nîmes, both from 2003. So wouldn't it be fun if you remind me of this going forward, when we finally get together, we'll open those and see how those bottles age.
Oh, well, I mean, you still have a bottle of Chateau Picard we have to open together.
We do have a bottle of Chateau Picard, a 2003 that I picked up. And I'm figuring you were such a Picard fan. And I asked if you'd ever had one and you said no.
I'm excited for it. Honest to God, it's one of the things I'm looking forward to. I mean, like another nice thing about the pandemic, so the other part about getting the new job is I now own a car. So I'm able to travel with my dog, which has always been the challenge because you can't bring a shedding dog in a rental car. They charge you a cleaning fee. But I was able to bring Henry down to meet your new dog. And we were able to chat and taste through a couple of things. That was definitely one of the highlights of the past month or so.
And speaking of tasting, I'm just starting out with the Rosé Report. So
hopefully we make the cut this year.
It's the wines are starting to trickle in. I'll tell you that I've done about 8 to 10 wines so far.
Any standouts?
The Château de Charme 2019 is quite a winner. A little bit surprised that they're pushing the 19.
That's something that Thomas told me, that because Château de Charme, they make their rosé with Pinot Noir, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that's true.
If Amelie, if you're listening to this, or Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I know with the 2017 When Pigs Fly, which you and I, we both know that was definitely the better of the two vintages I've made of that wine so far. But Thomas is the one who told me to set some bottles aside to age them. And I still have a couple bottles of the 2017. Rosé does age interestingly in Ontario. I think
I would say interestingly is a good word for it.
But I think with Pinot Noir, it has a little bit more longevity because you end up with some more floral notes. It just adds a nice complexity to it.
I still like them fresh.
Me too.
I love the acidity. What I have noticed though, and I think we've talked about it very briefly, was I don't think, and so far it has played out this way. I have tasted a few 2020s from Ontario. The acidity is not what it was in 19. Obviously, it's vintage dependent, and that's the reason. 19 is a very acid driven year. 20, a very ripe year, very good year. But those acidity, that acid balance is a little more fruit forward than in 19, where they were a little more with the lemony pucker. This year seems to be a little more red fruit forward on those rosés.
Yep, I'm dealing with that myself. Like I'm really excited for we're doing the final tastings before 2020 when Pigs Fly goes into bottles. I mean, it's the fun part about this experiment of getting involved as a producer is, you know, you have to deal with what the vintage gets you, what the vintage gives you. But I mean, if there's anything else that will teach me, like, frankly, we need to erase the term good vintage from our vocabulary and from the consumer vocabulary having to do with hot summers. Because when a summer is as hot as it was in 2020, you know, the wines across the board are going to be good. We're going to end up with delicious wines, whether it's rosé or sparkling or Pinot Noir or, oh man, I almost said it, or Cabernet Franc. But I mean, when you're dealing with those cool climate varieties, when you're dealing with your Rieslings, your and your Pinot Noir, it's a challenge to hold on to your acid to make sure that things ripen while you still have acid in your fruit.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to taste what those cooler climate varietals are like. And yes, will Riesling be good out of the gate? Yes. But do I see it, say, by 2023 starting to develop those harsh petrol notes? I think so. And that's just the nature of a hot vintage. We end up with a little bit of overripe Riesling, and we get what I call premature petrol. You know, it's not a fault, but it's, you know, drink those Rieslings earlier than lying them down, because, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you'll get those petrol notes that you would get in a, say, a 10-year or a 15-year wine.
But it's also the fun thing about Niagara and about Ontario wine in general is, I think not all wines need to spend, a crap ton of time in a cellar to be good. And, you know, I think for 2020, we're going to end up with some really fresh and fruity Rieslings that you don't want to hold on to. And they're going to be good. Drink them up. Drink up.
Just telling you, if you're a Riesling holder, I don't think 2020 is your Riesling year. 19, I would bet you, yeah, that's going to be the Riesling year to hold on to.
Yeah, there's no Riesling you should be holding on to your 2020s.
No, not your Riesling anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So, what have you tasted?
You know, Andre, I also tasted, and I want to give it a shout out. I thought the 2019 Henry of Pelham Estate Gamay was absolutely a delightful wine that I thought, is probably going to be my patio wine this summer. Chill it and just drink the hell out of it. It's, I think the word you usually call it is sessionable. It is such a lovely quaffing wine. I can't wait for the hot weather, the barbecues, the sitting outside, and just to, you know, have that in the fridge for, you know, 30, 45 minutes and then pull it out, maybe throw a sleeve on it just to keep it cool, and just crushing bottle after bottle of that.
I don't know. I think you and I talked about this. I just wasn't the biggest fan of it. I think it was okay, but oh God, why did we have to make it that word? So I recently tasted the 2019 Estate Chardonnay from Henry Pelham. Hang on,
my God.
Yeah, I got to update the spreadsheet.
That's 5 cents in the jar.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. We're working on it. I think since Lawrence has taken over the winemaking from Henry Pelham, something interesting has happened, because I know that with the Chardonnay from Henry Pelham, don't worry, I'm keeping track of all these. Before Lawrence took over, you ended up with wines that needed a bit of time in a cellar to come together. And frankly, I think the average consumer, when you're spending $20, $25 on a bottle of the, you know, that delicious white wine that I love, you know, you don't have the patience to put it aside for 6 months or 12 months. You just want to take it home and enjoy it. The last couple of vintages of said delicious white wine from Henry Pelham have just been head and shoulders above previous incarnations. And I hope it's a trend to continue it. You know, it has, I think while a lot of people in Niagara are looking more towards a Burgundian or French influence for their style of said delicious white wine, Henry Pelham is looking a little bit more New World. If you take a look at one of my last Instagram posts, I did a side-by-side of a Mâcon, a New Zealand, and a Flat Rock Chardonnay. This is going to be an expensive year, isn't it? but I mean, it was just,
and I'm not even goading you into this. You're just going down.
Well,
this
I mean, how can I talk
yourself?
About the, how can I talk about the grape without mentioning the name? Anyways, it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm so focused on hitting the swear jar. I think I've lost a bit of my train of thought.
You know what? But I really like the Henry Brian Schmidt's idea where he said that if, you know, when you hit a certain number, you've got to raise the bar. So if you hit, you know, 25 and paying 5 cents, your 26th is 10 cents.
Yeah.
And then when you hit 50, now it's 15 cents. I think that'd be kind of fun to see how high this gets.
I couldn't afford it. I just straight up couldn't afford it. But anyways, sorry, I guess to finish my point is, Henry Pelham has something that's a little bit more New World style, you know, compared to the, so it was a delicious white wine from Sacred Hill in New Zealand. Which leads to another conversation I'm sure we'll have at another time. It was a wine from Ontario, a wine from New Zealand, and a wine from France. One was, frankly, a little bit listless, and the other two were exciting and vibrant. All were between $18 and $22. Guess which wine was the most exciting of the three?
You're probably going to tell me it was the Ontario.
It was not.
New Zealand, then.
It was the New Zealand. I mean, your choices are limited.
Yeah.
The French wine was pretty listless, which I think, you know, signals to the problem with a region like Burgundy or, frankly, Bordeaux for the most part, that the entry-level wines just aren't super exciting, where, you know, Niagara was right in the sweet spot with the Flat Rock 2019 delicious white wine, VQA 20 Mile Bench.
But the one I liked from Henry was the Spec Family Reserve 2019. Chardonnay, and I can say that with immunity and impunity.
Yeah, it's not fair that you get to say it and I don't.
Oh, this is going to be a good year.
Oh, it
good
totally
year.
What else have you tasted that's interesting lately? I know you're working on your rosé report, but there's got to be some other stuff that you're up to.
Andre, for some reason, I went down the Irish whiskey garden path.
I love it. I'm disappointed you didn't post any pictures on social media. And frankly, that's another thing that made me a little bit jealous about the COVID situation, because I would have been down there in a heartbeat. I'm a bit of a whiskey aficionado. And frankly, every stupid thing I've ever done in my life has been as a result of Irish whiskey.
I did a few. I've got an article coming out, and I'm thinking of doing a few whiskey videos. The Sexton, which was a single malt, really had a, was a fan of that.
Oh, that's one with the it's got the creepy kind of packaging with the skull and
yeah, and it's the hexagon.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So that one was really good. A Dead Rabbit to me is always a go-to. Sadly, it's not in Ontario at the moment, but what a fabulous fabulous.
It's another
Irish
one that's
whiskey.
Sessionable. I think like just a splash of water makes that one very very dangerous
that,
sipping.
That was the one that I finally went, well, maybe I can deal with Irish whiskey. I'm not a Scotch whiskey kind of person. Then I had tried
like,
a Bush.
It usually
a
has
Bushmill,
that like
10-year-old.
So you were tasting a lot of citrus and a lot of honey. Like citrus and honey.
Yeah, so there was a Bushmill 10-year-old, which I was a big fan of. There was one called Paddy's Old Irish Whiskey. That had a creme brulee note that I was kind of excited about. And then I'm just looking through some notes. So there's one called Proper 12. No, nothing. You've never tried
no,
that
never
one?
Tried
that was
that
fruit
one.
Dominated.
Yep.
And then the one that there was a Hyde, which was matured in. I can't remember what this one is, but I'd have to look it up. Single grain Irish whiskey, 6-year-old. And then my favorite was one of, or at least one of my like top three was called West Cork Calvados Cask Finished.
Man, oh, interesting.
That one was just as sessionable as the Dead Rabbit.
Yeah, because I know like I do drink a lot of Calvados. One of my business partners and best friends, Guillaume, is from Normandy, and we've drank a lot of Calvados over the years. But the nice thing about Calvados is it's generally a little bit softer and more restrained on the finish. I would love to see what that would do to a grain spirit as opposed to an apple spirit.
It was one of those that I during this time, let's say, my neighbor and I have been watching the Montreal Canadiens play, obviously in separate houses, and then we'll meet in the backyard for a glass of something, be it wine, and I brought that whiskey out, and we had a couple of glasses of that one sitting out there.
So I'm guessing the Canadiens lost then.
Well, Canadians are, I don't know, they just came out of COVID protocol that they've had a week off that they weren't supposed to have, so that's, you know, so I've been jonesing for some hockey that I care about, and I just can't watch your Leafs, so.
I'll be honest, so I talk about the Leafs with my dad pretty regularly. I've just had a hard time getting into a lot of live sports this year. It just feels like there's too much going on to do that, but, you know.
It's an escape. Look, the Jays start in what, 2 days or something like that? You need the escape. You really do.
Yes.
You know, we've all been escaping into books and television. And sports has to be one of those escapes that gets us through.
It unites
us. It joins us. But it causes that fun little rivalry that you get to talk to people about and not want to, you know, pull out a gun and shoot people in a grocery store.
So before we wrap up here, I think you mentioned off the top, I actually can't remember if we were rolling or not, but you're watching Superstore on my recommendation.
Oh, my God. You know what? I think I started watching it, and then you said, have you watched Superstore? You were on season 4. And I said, we just started it. And you went, keep going. You're going to love it. And it is probably one of the most laugh-out-loud funny shows I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah. If I were a character on Superstore, which one would I be?
Glenn.
Oh, that's actually, I think, the nicest thing you've ever said to me. And, you know, I think it totally works because in my mind, you're Dina.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Yeah, because my first instinct when you said to me, you're late, I said, I want to meet your mother so I can shove you back in her, which is her line, right? So that was my first reaction to you going, you're late. So,
oh, well, I don't know if we covered enough wine content. I know we've got to do some booking to get some other interviews on the go. For Andre Wine Review, I'm working on a roundup of Fielding wines. Man, I think we need to maybe talk to Richie about Cabernet Franc, put him in our roundup, because there is one bottle of Cab Franc from the current lineup at Fielding that was a showstopper. And that's
I'll have to reach out to Richie, and then we'll get him on then.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
We are on the Cabernet Franc bandwagon.
Yes.
And Richie, when he, we had him on for the vintage roundup, he admitted some numbers to us for Fielding, which I had no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, is there anything else you want to say before you say goodnight, Michael?
You know what? No, I think, well, I've got, as I said, I've got a little bit of a whiskey article coming up for Lux Magazine.
I honestly can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. Please make sure you tag me in it.
Of course. What else have I got coming up? My newsletter's back. I took a few months off to try and either revamp it or just try to figure out which way I wanted to take it. And the newsletter is back. And thank you for everybody who reached out and said, is it coming back? Are you just dropping the ball on this? And I think that was the push I needed to have it come back, as people actually missed it. So
I'm still waiting for you to be a little bit more controversial in some of it. But, I mean, I still really look forward to reading it.
Yeah, some days I'll have I've decided at some points I'll have a little short piece in there, maybe to stir a little bit of something up. But, you know, I think the wine speaks for itself usually.
No, I agree with you on that. You know, we've picked up a couple of new Patreon supporters, and I know that it sounds like a commercial when I say it, but you have to remember, it's Michael and I. It's the two of us that do this. We don't make a lot of money at this. We do appreciate the support, because it does take a little bit of money to pay for our hosting, to pay for equipment, because sometimes things do break down, and, you know, a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there, it may not seem like a lot to you, but it does mean a lot to Michael and I. So check out the Patreon, Two Guys Talking Wine. Oh, Jim Ray, one of our supporters, asked a question about the ice wine harvest, which I answered him privately. Do we want to touch on that quickly before we wrap up?
No, maybe another time.
Okay.
I think we've either excited or bored people long enough, because it's just been you and I this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, we are boring, eh? I'm Andre Prue from AndreWineReview.ca. Follow me on social media at AndreWineReview.
And I'm Michael Pincus of MichaelPincusWineReview.com. We thank you for tuning into this one. Hope we made some sense to you. And everybody, you know, keep on the gas there. You know, we're almost through this thing. We're going to get through it together. On the other side, we'll meet, we'll have drinks. But remember to wear a mask, wash your hands, stay distance. We love you. Good night.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to Two Guys Talking Wine on iTunes.
This episode of Two Guys Talking Wine was produced by Jim Ray
and Adam Durand.